Thanks, Alfred. Like you said, my name is Meyer. I'm a master's student at North Dakota State. And I kind of put a fancy title up there to get some attention and hopefully fill the room. But really what I'm going to be talking about is redefining and making a new soil landscape model in the eastern glaciated plains of North Dakota. So here's the Barnes Soil Series. This is an extensive benchmark soil that's home to the eastern glaciated plains. It's ground moraine, local relief around 30 meters. It's all fine, loamy, calcareous till. That's the parent material. And it's about 80% crop, so it's extremely vital to the state in terms of agricultural production. And there's our study area outlined in yellow there for the till plain. Typically characterized by these complex slopes in some areas where you have more undulating rolling systems, and you see these whitish, grayish calcareous eroded knobs at the surface, and that's where we're getting all these energy dynamics and have this serious issue with accelerated erosion processes on these landscapes. If we zoom out and look at these erosion processes, it's a lot more obvious. Here's the 1 kilometer scale bar. And this is something that has been noticed for a long time. This is no new trend. As Lyle Sampson said back in 1985, where he just showed a series of slides of hill slope evolution and how the landscape was changing due to accelerated erosion from tillage. So here's the catena to give you an idea of what we're looking at. The Barnes Soil Series is on those backslope positions. That's the calcicapludol. The buse is on the more erosive portions. And on the summits and the shoulders, and then in the areas of accumulation we have the Sphia series, which is that pachycapludol and has dark mollic colors beyond 40 centimeters and is just really that accumulation of eroded topsoil from upslope. And in the 1970s, NRCS had to come up with a new soil series, the Langhi series, because it was no longer making mollic criteria, and we have inceptisols at some of those most eroded sites. So the big question here is, we think this landscape is still changing, but how is it changing? How are these map unit percentages changing? And also, what's out there? What are we not seeing on top of what we've mapped? So here's your typical Barnes pedon under native vegetation, tall grass prairie, the famous Schoenzem, really. And you can see the really dark colors and the excellent structure, aggregation. What's really important about this soil is that it's had the energy dynamics to leach calcium carbonate down in the profile, lower that pH to something that's more healthy. Well, now we've transformed to a system where we have this mixing of that cambic subsurface horizon, that brownish horizon, and the mixing of the calcic horizon. So we're getting really high pHs in the surface, which is an issue. First of all, one example is micronutrient deficiencies in this landscape. So fortunately, we have 1 meter DEMs from LIDAR for the state. We have a plethora of Landsat imagery. So I'm just going to talk about a few tools that we're trying to use to delineate this landscape. We started with the evapotranspiration algorithm called METRIC. And that uses Landsat imagery and some various weather data to calculate ET. This is a prior study leading up to this, looking at the Barnes Catena. And you can see this is like a relative ET, so that's like well-watered alfalfa at an hourly rate, and it's just an arbitrary value. And then these are the decreasing values, and you can see that the amount of erosion increases as ET decreases. So this was our justification going forward using that metric, as well as using some DEM attributes on top of it to delineate the landscape. And so overall, we want to be able to use these properties to be able to predict soil properties and then eventually use the relationships that we find to make predictive surfaces for the glaciated plains. So we set up a study area along the interstate, and we had 2 map units on B slopes and 1 on C slopes. And then we took the ET classes for each one of those for the entire study area, and we split it into 3 groups, low, medium, and high. And then we just sampled from the low sites for each map unit, and in total had 180 sample points. For the DEM and satellite methods, we used the hill slope at, the DEM attributes, slope profile and curvature and relative elevation at the scales of analysis that are deemed fitting to differentiate hill slope position. And then I also wanted like a hydrologic parameter to think about energy and mass inputs. So we used a modified catchment index, the Saga wetness index. And then we were also running into issues with the ET because of land management differences. You know, if you look at a field of soybeans that was planted 1 week before another field, well, they're going to be ahead in terms of crop growth development. So I made a more of a relative ET image from that original ET. So you can just see from greenness how that metric picked up the ET really well, but it's hard to compare soil properties across management decisions. So in the field, we dug holes to 50 centimeters, and then I characterized each hole by horizon, and then looked at all the properties that I felt were important to soil edaphic function, structure, color, seeing, looking for that mixed cambic horizon, looking at HCl effervescence for presence of carbonates, everything along those lines. And then I took representative portions from each one of the horizons at each sampling location and ran carbon analysis as well as pH and EC, and currently working on surface horizon texture as well. So I just want to give you a scope as to what we've been seeing in the field along the catena and at this shoulder summit position in the more eroded areas, this Langhi position. There's a soil profile there, and you can just see it's just gray, a thin solemn, just capping highly calcareous material. And here's a distribution of those chemical properties just to give you an idea. You can see the SOC is dropping off right at 10 centimeters, and you get this big bulge in calcium carbonate, and also pH is relatively high along 8 there. The thick barns is what I call it. It's on the more broader landscapes where there's been a lot more infiltration. And here we get the development of these lighter colored cambic horizons. And I promise you there are carbonates in there. It's just, when you dig all day, sometimes you get shadows in the morning. So looking at this chemical data, you can see that carbonate bulge coming in a lot deeper. And this is sort of our chemical signature of that cambic horizon. So the SOC is just slowly starting to decrease along these depths. And this is the soil that's threatened most on the landscape, where this cambic horizon is becoming incorporated into the surface and is being truncated. And so this is on kind of those higher energy environments that are more susceptible to erosion. And once again, you can just see that the SOC is dropping off much shallower. Carbonates are coming up higher in the profile. So these are those threatened systems that we're seeing. The last one is the sphia, and that's the areas of accumulation in the foot slopes and the toe slopes. And these oftentimes will have that A horizon below that hasn't been affected by tillage, but they're just really, really dark, completely leached of carbonates, really healthy systems, the best soils out there. And here's that chemical distribution as well. This bulge in carbonates doesn't mean anything because we're talking about 0.3 of a percent. So disregard that. But otherwise, you can see the higher soil organic carbon levels. And relatively, there's a bigger range of pH depending on how organic matter is acidifying that system or if there's upslope carbonates washing down into those foot slope areas. When I mentioned what's lurking out there, we're finding typic RGUdols in those more complex areas where we're getting a lot of infiltration, higher energy. Also, the through-flow processes, I think, are really big in these landscapes where we're getting argilluviation and actually getting real, just thick clay-laden argillic horizons. And we found 8 of these in our sampling set, so they're out there. Why is this important? Because it's not even in the map unit inclusions. So kind of a cool discovery along the way. But if we're looking at this landscape, there's Ross, my teammate, probably the best teammate a guy could ask for. He loved digging holes, so I didn't have to dig all of them. I won't take all the credit. Here's Ross again. He's slimmed down a bit, but we're trying to use, this is just to give you an idea, just a scope of the DEM attributes that we're using, these terrain attributes, to try and characterize this landscape. You can see the reds are the higher slopes there, and the lighter colors are those more flat areas. Here's relative elevation, where we have reds that are on average higher in the landscape and the blues that are on average lower in the landscape. So that kind of also gives us interpretations for hydrology as well. And now we're looking north on the other side of Ross here. And here's the wetness index, and this is that modified catchment area. So we're missing it. I think Foreman is hanging out all along this area, really. But really, this is a problem of scale, and I think we just need to be iterating over different scales of analysis to get it pinned down. So because we have to iterate along different scales of analysis, I don't have much for results yet. We're still working on that. But just to give you an idea of how this is playing out, organic carbon, the sum of weighted organic carbon to 50 centimeters, I just ran a multivariate linear model with the DEM attributes and the ET, and we were able to explain 44% of the variation with a 0.5% of error, which is pretty good, but obviously the model is overestimating organic carbon in the higher levels and then underestimating it in the lower levels. So if you have any suggestions to help me out with this, that'd be great. I'll take questions at the time. I'd like to also thank my supervisory committee, all the people who have helped fund this, and all the people that have gone out to the field with me to help me out. So, thanks.
Thank you. Then I ask a question, it's my role there. If there's no vegetation, how well can you just map these soils based on the color? Because it was so striking.
Yeah, that's another thing I'm looking at, is I'd like to add other Landsat bands that would help out delineate the landscape. But right now I just had ET, but I found this awesome tool called Google Earth Engine, where you can just query any layer that you want from any point in time. So I'd like to add those as well.
Anyone else? Yeah.
Yeah, no.
There's no question.
I'm sitting here thinking about Foreman, and it showed up in an unusual place in my show of horizons in the middle of the whole system. So.
Yes. Can you answer that, Mike?
What was the question again? I'm sorry. Well, I think really what it is there's just so much more potential energy in these landscapes, and I think a lot of it in these tills is just through flow through this higher system and is depositing there. I think one of the big issues, we always think of soils developing vertically, but I think in these landscapes, it's always these really well-drained areas, and there seems to be a theme. And I know there's been a lot of like mentioning of these Tipicard geodols in the literature, even back in the old soil survey days, but just never made it in for whatever reason. But
I guess some of it is new information too. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.